following program is brought to you by your friends at TheForce.net.
Oh, Maxie bit the Force.
And RebelScum.com.
You Rebel Scum.
The galaxy is listening.
This is a ForceCast Microcast.
Size matters not.
Brought to you by TheForce.net and RebelScum.com.
You may fire when ready.
Greetings, ForceCast fans, and welcome to the very first Expanded Universe Microcast, an extension of the ForceCast, which remains your weekly dose of Star Wars and much, much more. I am your host, Pete, and in this edition of the EU Microcast, we will be covering a lot of your favorite segments that you may be missing from the regular ForceCast, but we promised that we wouldn't leave you wanting, and so we're going to come through with that. We're going to follow up with an Expanded Universe character profile, part 5 of Jay Shepard's Introduction to the Expanded Universe. I'll be doing a quick game review of Empire at War, which is the strategy game by LucasArts and Petroglyph. But first, major EU announcement came out today, and we will certainly talk about this a lot more on the ForceCast this Friday. And spoiler alert, if you are following the Legacy of the Force storyline and you haven't gotten through all of it, you may want to tune out because this is going to cover some of that. Or if you want to get into that and you don't want it to be spoiled, tune out right now. But Del Rey has announced the 5 finalists for the Darth Who contest. Now, as long you may remember that earlier on, back in December, they took submissions for at StarWars.com for names of Jason Solo, who is turning towards the dark side, and what his name would be. And the winner will have their name used in the book, as well as some other cool incentives that made it great for fans to enter. But, of course, the best is to have your name entered. And we'll have more details on this, but just to give you a quick overview of what the names are, and it's Darth Echeron, Darth Cadus, Darth Judicar, Darth Paxis, and Darth Tarl. So those are going to be your 5. We'll have full details on this Friday's ForceCast about where you need to go to submit your vote, depending on which one you believe is the best, and where you can let your voice be heard once again when it comes to parts of the Star Wars universe. So look forward to that on this week's ForceCast, but I thought if we're going to do an EU microcast, we can't pass on the number one EU story so far this year. So that's your EU update as far as the Darth Who contest goes. Right now, I'm going to jump into this week's EU character profile, Ashrid Het. Ashrid Het was born on Tatooine in 47 BBY to an exiled Jedi mother who lived amongst the Tusken Raiders. His mother trained him in the ways of the Jedi as well as the customs of the Sand People.
Sand People.
When he was 15, his father was killed in the Tusken War, which was started by the Hutts. His father gave him his lightsaber, and he left Tatooine to begin his formal Jedi training.
You must learn the ways of the Force.
He was apprenticed to Ki-Adi Mundi, and went with him on missions to Malastare and an uncharted world inhabited by Senator Teeks. Here, he was confronted by Aurra Sing, his father's murderer. Het was consumed by rage and hatred, and almost fell to the dark side. Feeling confused, he asked to be released from his training and go into exile like his father. The Dark Woman talked him out of that and continued his training. He ascended to the rank of Jedi Knight and took Bat Jewel as his Padawan. During the Clone Wars, he fought as a general for the Republic, flying in air support during the Battle of Geonosis and led a battalion of clone troopers on Metalorn. After Obi-Wan Kenobi's presumed death at Jon Bim, Het joined with Anakin Skywalker, and together with Bat Jewel, they led the Republic defense of Aragonar. Their gunship was shot down, and the two were marooned behind enemy lines. Unaware of Anakin's feelings towards Tuskens, Ashrad pointed out to Anakin that the two of them shared many qualities. He even remarked that Anakin would have, quote, made a good Tusken. Ashrad intended the comment as a compliment, but Anakin took it as an insult to the death of his mother.
Anakin! Anakin!
No!
The differences in rank prevented Anakin from expressing his prejudice and anger towards Het, and instead, he projected his hatred on a group of enemy soldiers. Imagining them to be the Sand People who had kidnapped and tortured his mother, Anakin slaughtered them without pity. In the heat of his rage, Anakin even tried to attack Ashran, but the Elder Jedi fought him off and disarmed him. Shamed, Anakin confessed his deeds on Tatooine. In an effort to try and cure the boy of his anger, and knowing that it was the only way they would be able to work together, Ashrat removed his Tusken clothing and revealed himself to be human.
Those Tuskens walk like men, but they're vicious, mindless monsters.
He kept Anakin secret, vowing not to tell another soul, hoping that Anakin would resolve the issue himself. Het also decided to discard his Tusken facial coverings to be simply a Jedi rather than human or Tusken. Het later served as part of the Jedi Force dispatched to Salakumaya with Quinlan Vos and Opo Rancis. After the siege of Salakumaya, he participated in the mission to Boz Pity, where Adia Gallia was killed. Ashred Het was one of the few survivors of the Great Jedi Purge, and he returned to his homeworld and once again disguised himself as a Tusken Raider, preparing for his own private rebellion against the Galactic Empire. You can see the transformation of Ashred Het in Star Wars Republic, Outlander, Star Wars Republic, Emissaries to Malastare, Star Wars Republic, The Hunt for Aurra Sing, Star Wars Jedi Starfighter, Republic, The Battle of Jum Bim, Republic, Enemy Lines, Star Wars Obsession, and Republic, The Siege of Salakumaya. Just another quick note on Ashred Het. He will be debuting in Hasbro's EU comic book packs along with Anakin Skywalker, and I believe the issue that will be included with that is Star Wars Republic number 59, Enemy Lines. So you can look forward to that. So that wraps up our EU character profile. Now we're going to move on to Jay Shepard's Intro to the EU.
Welcome to Segment 5 in the Intro to the Expanded Universe segments here on the Forcecast. Today's segment covers the New Republic, which takes place after Return of the Jedi to just before the New Jedi Order series. This was the Renaissance period of Star Wars. It was in this era in 1991 that Lucasfilm allowed Bantam Spectra and Dark Horse Comics to revitalize and reintroduce the expanded universe to Star Wars fans. In fact, this era was mostly fleshed out by those Bantam Spectra books from the 90s. Dark Horse has its solid foothold in the EU here as well. A common question asked among new readers to the EU of these books is, in which novel did Luke fall to the dark side? Well, in fact, it wasn't a novel, but a 6-issue limited series, Dark Empire. One last thing I'd like to point out about this era before we get started. This was the Wild and Woolly expansion era. When these books and comics were being written, there was very little EU to reference, hence the occasional mistake. Plus, it didn't help that the stories were not released in chronological order. Readers had to keep checking to see, okay, Leia's the head of the New Republic? No, wait, not yet. Oh, no, she's retired now. It was all pretty confusing keeping up. I think Timothy Zahn best defined this era. His Thrawn trilogy was the first published books in this era, and the Thrawn duology were the last published books. His ability to capture the spirit of the movies is what made these books successful and what allowed the fledgling EU to flourish. And now, on to the list of titles. After Return of the Jedi and the few books that followed, there comes a brief Boba Fett comic, Twin Engines of Destruction, featuring a showdown between Fett and Jodo Kast, another Mandalorian that often impersonates Fett. You can also check out Kyle Katarn in the Dark Forces Rebel Agent and Dark Forces Jedi Knight graphic story albums from Dark Horse to find more about this ex-smuggler come Jedi. Then begins what I feel is the best series in the EU, the X-Wing series. The first four books are by Michael Stackpole, and they are Rogue Squadron, Wedge's Gamble, The Krytos Trap, and Back to War. This part of the series expands on the 12 pilots of the Rogue Squadron, including Wedge, Tycho, Wes Janson, Hobby, and a bunch of other new pilots. Stackpole, and later Aaron Alston, do an amazing job juggling 12 characters, numerous story arcs, starfighter battles, humor, and intrigue, all within the standard-sized paperback. Stackpole also worked closely with Lucasfilm and Timothy Zahn to help integrate his characters and events into the EU. The two authors even wrote two parts each of a four-part story published in the Star Wars Adventure Journal called Side Trip. Well, the first four X-Wing books took us from year 6 through 8 after Star Wars. The next three books continue into year 8 and are all penned by the equally talented Aaron Alston. They are Wraith Squadron, Iron Fist, and Solo Command. These books introduce Wraith Squadron, a group not as polished as the Rogues, but equally as tough. They're involved in the hunt for Warlord Zinj, a character introduced in the previously published, but next chronological book, The Courtship of Princess Leia by Dave Wolverton. See? Told you it got confusing. Hopefully to readers that can read these books in chronological order now, it will all seem well planned. If only they knew. Next come a pair of recent inserts into the timeline from Del Rey. First, the e-book, A Forest Apart, and then the novel, Tatooine Ghosts, both by Troy Denning. Tatooine Ghosts takes some knowledge from the prequels and applies it to Han and Leia's visit to Tatooine, where Leia learns a little something about her mother. Now, at 9 years after Star Wars, here comes the cornerstone books of the modern EU. These are the books that are a must-read on anyone's syllabus. Timothy Zahn's Thrawn Trilogy. Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and The Last Command. These novels, plus the trio of Dark Horse miniseries that adapt them, tell the arrival of Grand Admiral Thrawn, a blue-skinned alien who leads the Imperial Remnant in a bid to take back the galaxy from the New Republic. Besides Thrawn, readers were also introduced to Mara Jade, Talon Card, Borsk Felya, Admiral Pelion, the Nogri, Sparty cloning cylinders, Coruscant got its name, and we meet the Mad Jedi clone, Joris Sabaoth. This is followed by Stackpole's last X-Wing novel, Isard's Revenge, which features the return of one of the Rogue's most dangerous enemies. 10 years after Star Wars is Dark Horse's first foray into the EU, with Dark Empire by Tom Veitch and Cam Kennedy. It features the return of the Emperor and Boba Fett, issue number 4 features his surprising return, and Luke's fall to the dark side, so don't say I didn't warn you. Boba Fett returns for a series of one-shots that feature the mysterious bounty hunter, remember this was still before episode 2, who has to work for his living. Bounty on Barcuda, would you believe that his brother's name is Rai Kuda? When the Fat Lady Swings and Murder Most Foul are all drawn by Cam Kennedy and really evoke a great mood, which is perfect for this bounty hunter. This part of the era also finds the Dark Forces Jedi Knight 2 video game add-on Mysteries of the Sith featuring Mara Jade, plus another Boba Fett one-shot Agent of Doom written by current legacy author John Ostrander. Finally, Dark Empire 2, the inevitable sequel, expands the comic EU and sets elements in play that would get expanded in the Tales of the Jedi series, published later but chronologically before. This was followed by the two-issue Empire's End, in which the plot lines were quickly wrapped up and the Empire was put back in its box not to affect other continuity outside of the comics. Crimson Empire came next, a great series that introduced the Crimson Guard, or Emperor's Royal Guard, as we had never seen them before. Kier Kanos must deal with the Imperial Ruling Council and Karnor Jax as Jax attempts to take over the universe. This was followed by the Bounty Hunter's Kennex Keel, a one-shot that deals with Kier Kanos' alter ego. Back on the book side of the arena comes I, Jedi, the first and only first-person novel in the Star Wars EU. Michael Stackpole provides some great elements to the EU as he tells tale of Qoran Horn, the Jedi X-Wing pilot, and his attempt to join Luke's Jedi Academy, which was written about previously but occurs chronologically next in the timeline. Kevin J. Anderson's Jedi Academy trilogy, which is made up of Jedi Search, Dark Apprentice, and Champions of the Force, features a whole host of new and potential Jedi's training at Luke's newly formed academy on Yavin 4. Dark Horse presented its own sequel to this series in Jedi Academy Leviathan, which features some existing and other new Jedi on their first mission after graduation, so to speak. 12 years out from Star Wars finds Barbara Hambly's Children of the Jedi, a Luke story in which he discovers the Eye of Palpatine, and Darksaber by Kevin J. Anderson, in which the Hutts create a new weapon from the unused turbo laser core from the prototype Death Star. It's actually a little better than it sounds, folks. Year 13 brings us Aaron Alston's last X-Wing novel, Starfighters of Adumar, and the bizarre Planet of Twilight by Barbara Hambly. These are followed by Vonda McIntyre's The Crystal Star, featuring another plot against the Solo Children, while Luke continues looking for more lost Jedi and runs into the infamous Cult of Waru. Michael P. Cube McDowell then presents the Black Fleet Crisis trilogy, which is made up of Before the Storm, Shield of Lies, and Tyrant's Test. This features the New Republic scoring off against the Yavetha, and Lando and Lobot investigate a mysterious ship that leaps around the galaxy haphazardly. And then it's back to more trouble for the Solos in Christine Catherine Rush's The New Rebellion. 18 years after Star Wars, we get to learn a little bit more about Han's family, especially his crazy cousin Thrak and Sal Solo in the Corellian trilogy. made up of Ambush at Corellia, Assault at Salonia, and Showdown at Centerpoint, all by Roger McBride Allen. Finally, the Bantam Spectra EU entries are wrapped up with a pair of Zahn novels, Spectre of the Past and Vision of the Future, in which Mara and Luke investigate the reported return of Admiral Thrawn. Dark Horse shows us how complex marriages in the GFFA can be 20 years after Star Wars with Union, which ties the knot for Luke and Mara. Zahn then returns a year later with his sequel to Outbound Flight, but these books here were published first. Fool's Bargain, an ebook, and Survivor's Quest focus on Luke and Mara finding Outbound Flight decades later and learning what has become of the inhabitants. Rounding out the era are two series of young reader books. The first for late elementary age kids is called Junior Jedi Knights and consists of six books: The Golden Globe, Lyric's World, Promises, Anakin's Quest, Vader's Fortress, and Kenobi's Blade. All these books deal with 11-year-old Anakin Solo and his Jedi training. The second series was the popular Young Jedi Knights books, written by Kevin J. Anderson and his wife Rebecca Moesta Anderson. These books focus on Jason and Jaina Solo at the Jedi Academy. The 14 books are broken into three story arcs: The Rise of the Shadow Academy, featuring Heirs to the Force, Shadow Academy, The Lost Ones, Lightsabers, Darkest Night, and Jedi Under Siege. Then, The Fall of the Diversity Alliance, with Shards of Alderaan, Diversity Alliance, Delusions of Grandeur, Jedi Bounty, and The Emperor's Plague. And finally, Under Black Sun, which features Return to Ord Mantell, Trouble on Cloud City, and Crisis at Crystal Reef. Remember that these are not all that's occurring during this time frame, as there are always short stories and other tidbits that are created for backstories and other mediums. However, this should give you a guide to the major works in place during the era. Be sure to check our show notes for more information on the New Republic era, and listen in for future segments where I will continue to give you an introduction to the remaining eras and keep you updated on the current happenings in that galaxy far, far away.
Thanks, Jay. You know, I can't say enough how much I appreciate how much Jay Shepard actually does for the show. And for those of you who have emailed us, you know that Jay is often the one who responds because he's got such a wide array of knowledge. So we always appreciate when Jay can chime in. And this series has been fantastic. Hopefully you, as our listeners, have enjoyed it. Moving on, I'm going to jump into my rundown of Empire at War. Now, this is actually a game that was released back in February, but was re-released as part of the Best of Star Wars PC set that came out just prior to Christmas. And so I wanted to jump into that because it's fairly new to me, and as part of that package, it's one of the better offerings. And I will be getting to the other games that are on there, like Knights of the Old Republic and Republic Commandos, but for now I'm going to concentrate on the original release of Empire at War and how it stacks up to prior releases under the strategy genre. Now, in the past, when you said Star Wars and strategy game, usually it was followed by a groan or grumble or something that led to a negative, but Star Wars Empire at War comes through in a big way. The game takes place in the Rebellion era, so you're going to see all the original trilogy characters, the vehicles that you've come to love, and the planets that you all know. The game kind of takes place on three different levels. The first is the galactic map, which shows you an overview of all the planets that are out there, the ones that you control, the ones that your opponent controls, and some mystery planets thrown in there. At this level, you can build structures on the planets, space stations in space, galactic units in order to control your space fleet, also ground units to control your invasion fleets, and make any adjustments on where you want to put units and where you want to take your next conquering force to. Once you get past that, you move on to your battles. And you've got a space battle and a land battle. The space battles are outstanding. You have a group of ships that you're flying into, and you clash with space stations or other ships or whatever may be there to try and thwart your takeover attempts. You can get capital ships, you can get the snub fighters, you can get all the ships that you could possibly want in the Rebellion era, and it's up to you how you want to stack your fleet. If you want to have mostly capital ships and just rely on firepower, you can do it. If you want to rely on your snub fighters to go after the capital ships or to destroy ship to ship, you can do that. It's completely up to you. Obviously, there's a strategy that you can implement that's going to work best for you or work best in the game, but whatever you want to do, that's how you want to do it. The interesting thing about it is that it takes place on a 2D surface where you can control all the units or control individual units as you want. But an added bonus is that there is a 3D cinematic camera that you can turn on at any point during the battle and turn off any point during the battle, and you can watch the battle as it translates. Now, anybody who's played strategy games before knows that some of the action, and actually a lot of the action, takes place without your interference. You can direct your ships on where they go or who they attack, but for the most part, they're going to attack and do things on their own. You don't have to actually direct them on where to hit or on, you know, where to aim or anything like that, like you would have to with a first-person shooter. Now, as you have taken over the space over a planet, you're not quite done. You have to move in and take over the bases on the planet. You move your forces in, and you have to attack against the forces that have been set up on the ground units. And you can do that as you see fit. Once again, you can take in mostly troops, you can take in bigger ships like walkers, or you can use a mix of both. The important thing to remember when you're doing a planetary battle is that there are transition points that you need to take over, and as you take these over, you can include more units in your invasion force. This makes things a little bit more difficult when you're in the planetary side of things, because if you get into a point where your forces are overwhelmed, you can't call on reinforcements quickly enough because they have to land them on the planet, which is awesome because it's a very realistic portion of the game. Well, I won't say very realistic, but it is a more realistic portion of the game, and I will say that I lost several battles because I didn't have a sufficient force and couldn't get reinforcements in there quick enough in order to save me. So, once you've gotten all that down, then you can start to work through finding out which planets you want to take, which planets, if you have the Death Star, you just want to destroy outright, and how you're going to go about taking over the entire universe. It's all up to you, and that's what makes this game fun, and really, over and over, you can play it without getting bored with it, because the scenarios come up differently every time. You can go with different technology levels and different limits on you or your opponent, make it more difficult, make it easier. You can get better ships, you can get worse ships. It's all up to you on how you want to do it. And in the past, there's been something left to be desired when it comes to Star Wars strategy games. However, if you are looking for one or you are a fan of strategy games, this is one that you should certainly go out and give a chance to, because they really took it to the next level, and there's a lot of different scenarios that you can bring in, and as they have the expansion pack, you can even go out and make it even bigger and better as you've gotten more in tune with the game. So if I have to give my review, this is a definite thumbs up, and again, as part of this Best of Star Wars PC pack, which I believe is retailing at $30, you can't beat it because you're getting 5 games for basically less than the price of one. And even though they're older games, they still have a lot of enjoyment. If you haven't played them on the PC or if you haven't tried some of them, now is the time to do it. I'll be back again in the next EU Microcast with a review of Knights of the Old Republic, and for anybody who hasn't played it yet, I'm just going to go out and say, you better do it soon, because I might have to ruin it for you. Until then, I'm Pete with Forcecast, and I leave you with this.
When the 501st was finally rotated out of Felucia, Ayla Secuda made a point of seeing us off personally, calling us the bravest soldiers she had ever seen. It's a good thing we were wearing helmets, because none of us could bear to look her in the eye.
This podcast is not endorsed by Lucasfilm Limited or 20th Century Fox and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The official Star Wars site can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names and sounds of Star Wars characters, vehicles, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Lucasfilm Limited or their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of the Force.net LLC unless otherwise indicated.